It's 5:20, and this is the KDLL Evening News for Friday, December 19th on 91.9 FM, Kenai Soldotna, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up, the U.S. House passes a bill to restore union rights for federal employees. But first, Alaska's Forestry Division says it understands the Caribou Hills are best kept for recreational use as it considers creating a Kenai Peninsula State Forest. The division held multiple public meetings on the peninsula to gauge interest in the issue and heard multiple concerns about public access to the popular recreation area on the southern peninsula.
If we did get overwhelmingly, you know, positive feedback on this idea of establishing a state forest.
That's Lily Coyle. She's the Forestry Division's Special Projects Coordinator and moderated a virtual public meeting last week.
And went to, you know, proceed to the next step, which would be putting together a state forest proposal that would be looking at specific areas to include. That Caribou Hills area, it wouldn't make sense to include it really because it's classified as, you know, best use recreation.
It's been about a month since the state issued a call for input on a potential Kenai Peninsula State Forest, but the state still doesn't have an exact map of what area is being considered for inclusion. And Kenai and Kodiak area forester Diane Campbell says the state forest concept isn't even an official proposal yet.
We want to start off by saying there has been no proposal. There is no proposal written at this time. This is strictly an outreach to get community interest and to inform the community of what we're thinking.
The division has succeeded in getting community interest. After the public notice was published, pushback came swiftly from parts of the peninsula. Snow machiners in the Caribou Hills area near Homer, for instance, have expressed concerns about access to existing trails on state land. And Coyle says the state has listened.
We've heard, you know, loud and clear from the public that there would be no interest in having that be a part of a state forest proposal.
A state forest can only be designated by the Alaska legislature. If the Forestry Division determines there's enough public interest, they'll draft a formal proposal and forward it to the Alaska Department of Natural Resources Commissioner. The commissioner would then bring it to lawmakers. Creating a Kenai Peninsula State Forest would mean shifting management authority over existing state land on the peninsula from the Division of Mining, Land, and Water to Forestry. Coyle says the change would boost timber management, such as for harvest and regeneration after the latest spruce bark beetle outbreak. But access to existing resources, like trails, would be a priority too.
On the Kenai Peninsula, there is a desire, you know, at the Division of Forestry, as well as at DNR, to just help enable more active management to try and help kind of rebuild and re-strengthen that forest canopy, as well as try and reestablish and support local small industry on the peninsula.
The Alaska Division of Forestry is accepting public input on its Kenai Peninsula Forest idea through mid-January. Comments can be submitted online or by mail. The division is holding another in-person meeting in response to public demand. The meeting will be held January 6th from 6 to 7 p.m. at Kenai Peninsula College's Kachemak Bay Campus in Homer. Alaska is expected to have a soft winter tourism season after a dip in visitation last year. Last winter saw a drop of almost 22,000 visitors. The number of travelers coming to the state each year between October and April has grown by almost 150,000 in the past two decades. Jillian Simpson is the president and CEO of the Alaska Travel Industry Association. She says that dip is likely tied to economic uncertainty weighing on consumers. She says industry businesses are expecting fewer visitors than last season.
Alaska is definitely a destination that takes time and money in order to come here and visit us. And so that can make people want to wait until they feel more confident with the economy.
Northern Lights viewing is one of the most common activities for wintertime visitors, according to an Anchorage Airport Wi-Fi survey that fielded over 7,000 responses between October 2024 and April 2025. It also found that aurora hunting is a popular activity for residents. Breweries and distilleries were also a draw for both tourists and residents. Meetings are another important factor to winter tourism. According to Visit Anchorage, the majority of international, national, and statewide conferences are held in the city in the winter months. Simpson says Alaska scenery is a year-round driver for tourism, and in the winter, it's a chance to see the northern lights that draws visitors.
But then when people get here, there's so many really cool things to see and experience that they wouldn't elsewhere, like the opportunity to go dog mushing, for example, or to see the Iditarod.
People who visit Alaska are categorized as either cruise visitors or independent travelers. Independent travelers primarily fly to the state and make up the overwhelming majority of winter tourists. And finally, it's been a rough year for Alaska's 15,000 federal employees. Along with job losses and funding uncertainty, in March, President Trump signed an executive order to take away union protections from a large swath of the federal workforce. The U.S. House gave public employee unions a ray of hope last week, but as Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports, Alaska's representative wasn't part of it.
The Republican-led House delivered a rare rebuke of Trump and passed a bill to restore union rights for federal employees. 20 Republicans joined Democrats to pass it. Alaska Congressman Nick Begich wasn't among them. Stephanie Rice, a federal worker from Anchorage, says she was surprised by his vote, given Alaska's high number of federal jobs.
That's 4.6% of the state's total employment. That's a huge chunk of his constituents that are directly impacted by this legislation. And so I was very disappointed to see that he didn't vote to restore our collective bargaining rights.
Rice is president of her union, National Federation of Federal Employees, Local 1945. She works for the Bureau of Land Management's National Operations Center, but says she's speaking for herself and her union, not the agency. Begich didn't respond to an interview request nor provide a statement explaining why he voted no. But the Republican who led the House debate against the bill, Representative James Comer of Kentucky, said Trump is trying to get rid of the union contracts to provide more effective personnel management and streamline the disciplinary system for federal employees.
The reality is that pre-existing union agreements the president never signed onto can subvert these efforts. They provide barriers to accountability beyond basic employee protections that exist in law.
Begich's vote and his position on organized labor more generally align with most Republicans in Congress. But it marks a departure for Alaska's congressional delegation. The AFL-CIO ranked Alaska's Dan Sullivan and Lisa Murkowski as the Republican senators who most often voted pro-union in the last Congress. And unions were big contributors to the late Congressman Don Young's political campaigns.
Congressman Young always said that the unions weren't the enemy, they were the canary in the coal mine, telling Congress when things were wrong in the facilities or the agency.
David Traver is chief steward of AFGE Local 3028, which represents employees at the Veterans Affairs Medical Center in Anchorage. He says Begich hasn't shown an inclination to be the champion of organized labor the way Young was. Begich last year won the endorsement of the National Right to Work Committee, a counterforce to union power. The AFL-CIO endorsed his opponent. Unions like the one at the Anchorage VA are still representing employees, but Trump's order in essence tore up their contract. Travers says that leaves workers vulnerable to unfair treatment.
I will tell you, it was an insult.
The House passed bill to restore those union contracts goes next to the Senate, but labor leaders say a likelier route for becoming law would be as part of a government spending bill next year. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
And that'll be all for tonight's KDLL Evening News. We had help from Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., and from Ava White in Anchorage. You can re-listen to this newscast and find our other stories online at kdll.org. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Have a terrific weekend.